This is the Pitch Fishing Academy Cricket Show number 95. This is the Pitch Fishing Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com, email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com, and call us on 0208 816 7691. Well, it's another packed show this week, so we're going to get straight into it. But before we get started, I just wanted to remind you of some of the topics that we are looking for some feedback on. We're still looking for countries for the Appeal of Nations, so if you think you can represent your country at the highest level with an appeal, special points given for volume, length, exotic vocal timbre, aggression and desperation, then give us a call on 0208 816 7691 and you can leave a message on the answer phone there. If you're not in the UK, you can still call us on that number just by adding 44 at the beginning. But if you're in Australia, you can call us on 02 8005 7925. And if you're in the USA, it's 347 722 1981. We're also still looking for the most committed players. 250 miles is the longest round trip that we've managed so far. Can anyone beat that for a normal game of cricket? And the Pitch Vision Select 11 is still looking for batsmen, bowlers, an all-rounder and a wicketkeeper. You can email us or phone us or get us on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach. We've got some coaching questions to answer for you this week. Don't forget that if you've got any coaching questions, you can email those in on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com or send in your questions to Twitter at PV Cricket Coach. Post them on our Facebook page, which is Pitch Vision Academy, if you do a search for that. Or you can phone them in on 0208 816 7691. So now, it's back to Pitch Vision HQ with Berners and I and the discussion. Have you seen anything that's happened in the Ashes that lessons you can take for when you're playing on a Saturday afternoon?
I think if you look back to one of the early periods of play where England had the Australians three down, and the way that Trott was right on his toes quite often in kind of club cricket and in the cricket that I've been traditionally involved in, people often, we say, start slow, bowlers and fielders. And if you look at that kind of opportunity which was provided to the England fielders, they had to make the most of that, and they hit the stumps and they caught their catches, which was a great way to start a game. It was, you know, in all sports, again, getting a good start, being on the money from the start often sets the foundation. And to have Australia three down, you know, you were nearly having a heart bypass looking at that screen.
Yeah, I thought the thing that I thought was looking at the way Peter Siddle played in the first test, that it's not about being a brilliant player, like say Mitchell Johnson is. He can be brilliant and he can be terrible. It's more about putting in consistently decent performances rather than being
exactly
amazing 1 minute and terrible the next.
A big thing in a series like this, which has often been historic, are key moments. You know, key moments where someone's been bowled out by a magical delivery or a fantastic catch, which just slightly changes the whole emphasis of things, and maybe people starting to turn their heads, and the Aussies are sat there up on the balcony and thinking, if we make a mistake here, you know, England are going to take this chance if it comes their way. And I think England's fielding, they spoke a lot about the fielding and the way that they changed their approach towards that, a little bit more professional and the fitness side of things, definitely. And looked very, very sharp to me, really sharp in the field, like having a 12th man.
A fielding is so important now. It's almost become a cliche to say it, but it's also, just taking it down to club level again or school level, it's also one of the last things that you do. You know, the coach has to really push players into doing their catching practice or whatever, but
sure,
you can see from the example of Australia in the old days and England these days that work pays off so quickly.
Absolutely. And from a bowler's perspective as well, you know, to get their bread and butter, they need the catches to be held. And it gives you a massive boost. You know, if your fielders aren't supporting you and you're running in the heat, and Australia was say 200 for none, it becomes a subtly different game than if you if your guy at first slip's taking an absolute worldie and setting the pace and the tone for what proceeds.
That's one of the things that gets me about at club level as well, that you can see at a higher level the difference it makes when you apply yourself in practice. And I think certainly in this country anyway, there's a mentality with practice that you just sort of rock up and, you know, you turn your head over and have a hit.
No one's interested.
Yeah.
Because that is the mentality. It's what's good for me. I've been in the office slugging away. I'm going to rock up and I'm going to pulverise some young 12-year-old over mid-wicket for half an hour. Unfortunately, on a Saturday, about your only reward is a ham sandwich at the interval, isn't it? Let's be honest, because you're not really getting anywhere. But yeah, and that changes as well. I guess that's a whole kind of mindset on the sort of level of cricket you play. Also, maybe the environment you play. I spent a season over in Australia, totally different, absolutely different to what you would have in England. I mean, running around an oval fully padded with a helmet, your arm guard on, when it's about 25 degrees because you've just nicked off in the nets, you soon learn to apply yourself a little bit more in that scenario than what you would in England, because in England, you know, someone's bringing you down a carling of, you know, a can of carling or something, and yeah, it's all a big laugh and a joke, and it's all quite funny, and there's a bit of banter, but really doesn't really get you very far, does it? So,
and it's probably why you don't get many late bloomers coming through.
Yeah, because yeah, well, people see a brick wall, don't they? They don't see any other option to get into the game, and they'll soon lose their kind of interests. They have children, whatever. Yeah. It's the normal kind of format. But yeah, I think there is that kind of element of hope, certainly down under, where people believe in their own ability, that they'll always get given a chance if they produce the goods, which is quite interesting. You're telling me the story about the army recruit, David, from Gloucestershire.
Yeah,
that's a good example of someone who's come in the back door, so to speak.
Yeah, the story there is that a pace bowler called David Wade, who has played club cricket for years and has a career in the army, has signed for Gloucestershire for the 2011 summer, and he's got special dispensation from the army to play, to be available for the entire season from April to September. So instead of going to Afghanistan, he's going to be playing professional cricket, which
he's going to Glass. He's going to get on the cider.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe he'll leave that off. But it is interesting, the parallels, seeing as he's in the army, it is interesting the parallels, you know, between sort of the mentality of being in the army and the mentality of playing cricket. I suppose, you know, it is sort of war on grass, isn't it? That's what they.
Yep.
Say.
Like we were discussing, I think a lot can be taken from that of the army, the way they often have a strategy or a plan of attack which is stuck to 100% and then executed, which is often the root of their success. So I could imagine for someone with that kind of background going into cricket, being very decisive, knowing what he's capable of doing and applying probably fundamentally a lot of the training regimes that he's been used to doing, I'd imagine he would be a godsend to any coach there at Gloucester to work with for the summer, and I hope he does really well. It could be a real fairy tale story if he kicks on and, you know, has his heart set on England. I'm sure he's not going to be settling for a second best given this opportunity. He'll be looking to really maximise it.
Yeah, and it shows that even at 27, you know, which is, you know, especially in this country, is pretty old.
Yeah,
you can do it if you've got the right mentality, sure, and the right, you know, you practice.
I think probably a little bit worrying for English cricket that they were having to resort to army recruits. You know, you have these academies running which are highly financed, and you know, that everyone talks about the growth and the bedrock of English cricket, and that would be a little bit worrying that we're turning our arm to an Apache hunting warrior to lead the attack for the cider boys down there in Gloucestershire. But yeah, it goes to show that there is always a possibility, and I guess guys can dare to dream, so to speak.
Well, it is strange because the way the system seems to work is that you get to 16, 17, 18, and if you're not one of the best players in your age group, then you're on the scrap heap.
Absolutely.
It's a funny way of doing things, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same in football. We keep on talking about other sports, but it is the way. You know, often if you're not at the right school or you're not in the right kind of group of players, you can have all the talent in the world, which is often neglected. But I guess it's those amongst us that do batter down doors, the ones that keep on going, maybe move on to new pastures when things aren't going their way, that eventually do succeed. So fair play and good for Gloucestershire. I'm sure there's good reasoning behind it. And he must be very talented as well to be able to get picked up at such a late stage, and probably after not, you know, being seen quite so much as you could imagine. An academy boy is monitored and people know all about his movements and what he's capable of doing. Yeah, he must be a real talent, so it'd be good to watch him on the telly and see what he's got to offer.
So now it's time for our quickfire questions feature, and carrying on from last week, we had Ryan Marron of the Cape Town Cricket Academy. We have another Cape Town Cricket Academy coach this week, and it's Andy Moles. You may recognise the name Andy Moles. He's a former first-class cricketer who played for Warwickshire, who's now moved into coaching. He's coached Scotland, Kenya, Northern Districts, and most recently New Zealand. And whenever a coaching job comes up at the highest level, he's always a name that's in the frame. I caught up with Andy on the phone and he answered a few questions for us. How important is it to coach flair into players as well as technique?
I don't think you can actually coach flair. I think flair comes from the confidence a player gains from knowing his game, and also being confident in the way that he plays. And when he shows that confidence, I think then becomes the flair. So I think it's really important that it's like building blocks. You put your technique in place and then you learn your role in the side, and when you put that all together, then flair comes from having those two skills.
If you could give one tip to a young player with ambitions of playing top level cricket, what would it be?
I heard Ryan say no shortcuts, but another sort of going on from that theme is, you know, to practice really, really hard. I mean, practice is rehearsal of performance, and if you need to perform, then you've got to really practice and try and practice really to the type of game you're going to play or the type of bowlers you're going to play against next. So specific practice, I think, is very important.
Which is more important as a coach, to be successful or to be well-liked?
I think we all like to be liked. You know, as human beings, we don't like it when we upset people and people, you don't get on with people. But having said that, there's a famous quote from Steve Waugh that said that all coaches, if they're being liked all the time, aren't doing their job properly. You know, unfortunately, as a coach, you've got to drop people, leave people out of teams. You know, and unfortunately, players take shortcuts too often. And it's a coach's job to pull them up and make sure that they make, at times, put them out of their comfort zone so they get used to working under pressure. And when you do that to players, especially senior players, they don't like it and you become unliked. But having said that, you need to get on with doing the best for the player, and you know, at times you have to put them under pressure, so therefore you don't get liked all the time.
If you could have only one coaching aid, one piece of equipment with you and nothing else, what would you have?
Probably a video camera, because when you're trying to explain to players how they can change technique, and you know, it's very difficult to sell an idea to a player if you're just selling a dream, whereas if they can actually see the reality of the way they're playing and you can show them their shortfalls, it's much easier for the player to see and understand what they're doing wrong if they can see the problem as opposed to try and imagine it. So I think the video camera, videoing and analysis, things like that have become very important in cricket coaching.
And tell us a bit about your role within the Cape Town International Cricket Academy.
Well, I think predominantly I'll be involved in the batting side, which I thoroughly enjoy. But really, I think all three of us will cross match over with all the applicants that join us, the students, and help them in all aspects of the game. Now, I certainly don't think I'll just stay just doing batting only. I think, you know, as Ryan said earlier, it's very important that we help these young men become better people. And I think through that, in my experience, that helps them become better players as well.
And finally, we finish just with a little bit of fun. What talent do you have outside of cricket that we'd be surprised about?
Probably private middle, probably say drinking, but that's for me. No, but I enjoy cooking. Regularly out here when the weather's good, and don't do it so much in England, you have a barbecue in England. I enjoy, they call it brying over here, where you get, instead of beef burgers and sausages, they do it in, you get good old steaks and put them on the fire, and it's a great way to talk about cricket. So, you know, that's certainly something we'll do when during the course. We'll get the guys around, have social evenings. I've always found in the past that that's the best way to talk to players in a social environment. And so I enjoy burning a bit of red meat on a fire and having a couple of beers. And as I say, I think we'll do plenty of that when the guys are over here, because I think in that environment, players are open to taking new ideas on and talking about the games, and you get to know about people even more.
That sounds pretty good. And Andy Moles, those are your questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to move on to talking about some cricket coaching questions, and we've got some questions from listeners to the show who want to know a few bits and bobs about different things. So, Berners, if you could do the honours and read a few questions, and then we'll just chat around
the
subject and see what we can come up with. So we've got
we'll start with one here by young Adil. It's to do with his bowling and a few problems he's having. I've had an annoying problem of late where in the nets I bowl quick and accurate, like I've got the ball on a string. But when it comes to a game, I just can't bowl. I lose both my pace and accuracy. I've tried visualisation, this and that, but in games the only way that I can bowl accurately is if I don't hang in my action and bowl slowly. I'm really at a loss at what to do. Please, can you help me?
Well, it's common. I think every single person who's listening to this who's played cricket for any length of time will know somebody who's a bit like that, you know, the net batsman who creams it all round, but the moment he gets out in the middle, he looks like a rabbit in the headlights. Or the bowler like Adil, who seems to just be the best net bowler you've ever seen, but he gets out in the middle, he doesn't know
it all goes
how to
wobbly.
Get it to the other end, you can't hit the cut strip.
Yeah.
So he was talking about, I mean, he mentioned visualisation there, mental side of it, but he said the problem I've got is, and then he mentioned the technical point, and I think that is maybe his particular problem, and that's what happens with a lot of people in this situation. They start to think about it too much, and as soon as you think about it too much, you tense up, and if you tense in any cricket skill, if you're too tense, if you're not relaxed, if you're not feeling confident, then you're not going to do well. In the nets it doesn't matter, you know, there's nothing on it. If the batsman smashes it into the net, so what? Yeah. You know, I'll just bowl another ball in a minute.
So what sort of things do you think, David, he could do? Possibly just calm down, settle himself a little bit before the game? What sort of things would you advise for that sort of stuff?
Well, there's a couple of things he can do. And they all link together. The first thing really is to find out what works, what routine works for you before a game. So you might have to experiment with what gets you in that sort of relaxed and happy state of mind before the game. Some people, they want to be very precise, and they want to know exactly what they're doing and have exactly the same warm-up and pack their kit bag in exactly the same way. And you know,
I eat chicken and beans.
Chicken and beans
every time. That's my recipe. I might want to consider changing that, I think. But it's always has been chicken and beans.
But if it gives you confidence, then it's not. It's a ritual. It's part of a routine, and that is absolutely crucial to you feeling confident. It could be stupid, you know. There's
superstitious stuff.
Yeah, stupid superstitious stuff that you'd think it doesn't make any difference. It doesn't make any difference.
But you do it
in your head. If you don't do it, you don't feel confident. So you know, make sure that you when you walk onto the pitch, you're feeling confident. The other thing is that if you are a net player, it's probably best to practice in a way that highlights your weakness as much as you can.
Yeah.
So if you are going to the nets and you're bowling really well, then while you're going to the nets, you probably need to spend more time doing middle practice, or play, you know, find a knock-up game somewhere, play a midweek game, or play on a Sunday, or, you know, play friendly matches. Get yourself out in the middle in that big open field.
I don't know how old Adil is, but do you think sometimes age, maybe during those kind of teenage years, as people are kind of developing in life in other areas, you know, as they're turning 18, 19, girls, fast cars, women, maybe has something to do with it, as well as they kind of like have lots of different ideas and thoughts going through their head, and their brain and their body are twitching to do different things?
Yeah, possibly. That's interesting. I didn't think about it like that. I mean, you know, a distraction is a distraction, but what you tend to find with players who are distracted is they are... They're always distracted, you know. They don't. You can see them not really putting everything in at practice, and you can see you can tell they're not fully into it when they're out there.
Do you think that's the ones with three or four girlfriends? Because they're trying to remember numbers, they're trying to remember dates, restaurant names, and so on. So I can imagine it's quite a juggling act to think, where am I pitching this ball right now in amongst all that noise and confusion?
Well, yeah, exactly. But that would affect you whether you're in the nets or whether you're in the middle. So while that is a valid point, I think probably, I mean, you have to be detective slightly. I mean, it's impossible from the two-line email that you send to know for sure, but I would suspect that it's more of a confidence thing, and there are little psychological tricks that you can do. I mean, you mentioned visualization there. I mean, it's not just thinking about scoring 100 once and going, well, that didn't work, or it's not just thinking about taking 5 wickets once. It's a complete process. It's a beginning to end process, and if you want to do that, you can't do it half-heartedly. You know, you've got to do it. You've got to try and do it properly. But one really simple and quick, effective trick, which I've talked about a lot, is the one called the stop technique, which is a proven psychological trick. You can do that. You can do it anywhere. You can. There's lots of different ways of doing it. But the one that I always mention is, if you find yourself thinking a negative thought, you're standing at the top of your run and you're thinking, oh God, I don't know where this is going to go. You know, am I going to be a Mitchell Johnson today? Am I going to bowl a double wide? If you start thinking like that, just think to yourself, like a red traffic light or a stop sign, and you think, stop. And then you just think something general and positive, like, oh, I know I'm a good bowler. I know I can do it. And don't think about specifics. Yeah. Clear your mind and then try and bowl.
Yeah, I think as well, a lot of these young bowlers, you know, they're very... very keen to kind of bowl different deliveries. They're often taught about the different ways they can swing the ball and bowl slower balls and use the crease. And if you look at some of the most famous and, you know, the greats almost of bowling, it's all about consistency. They're repeating the same thing over and over again. They're not doing that. They're not looking to try to be too smart.
Yeah.
They're happy just to settle for second best because they know eventually they'll work someone out, and it's probably, you know, an element to it these days with people just trying to be a little bit too smart. You know, they try to be a little bit too smart, and it gets them up the creek, because if you're not good enough, you get found out. You know, if you're trying to bowl quick and straight and hit those areas, and you're not quite good enough, then yeah, your world's going to come crumbling down, a bit like a sandcastle on Bournemouth Beach. Okay, we've got a question here from Glenn over in sunny Sydney. Just a quick question about his son, 16-year-old lad. Just his son's a left-arm opening bowler in third grade in the Sydney grade competition at the moment. He's had a huge and quick growth spurt, and it's still going on, though it's slowed down somewhat. He's about 193 centimetres and very slim, good height for a bowler. But everyone always jokes that you could snap him in half. He has a lot of explosive power with his bowling, but needs to get strong. I'm a bit concerned about taking him to a gym and have him doing weights. He is doing core strength work when we can get him off his backside to do it. Yeah, sounds about right for the Aussies. But I would like to know what it is the best for strengthening, as we have to protect his back. So there we go, David. We've got a large, gangly, long fella from Sydney who wants to toughen up a little bit. What do you recommend?
Yeah, the type of bowler who'd get snapped in half in a strong wind. We've all seen those young lads still growing.
The beanpole.
The beanpole, exactly. Well, it's an interesting question on a couple of levels there. The first thing, I suppose, is it suitable to do strength training for a 16-year-old, generally? Because there is a bit of a myth around that, you know, you can't do weight because it'll stunt your growth. Or
sure.
But, I mean, none of that is true. It's a complete myth that's just grown up over the years because... I think probably because people are a bit nervous about doing damage to
surely,
growing
surely,
bodies.
Surely that's all to do with the amount of weight you're picking up. You could do some core strength work or something with some light weights, or is that not an option?
No, that's totally against the type of thing that I recommend. The whole thing about strength training stunting your growth is comes from a single study that was done on children in China many years ago that saw that they were shorter than average height and concluded because they were poor children and they had to work and carry heavy weights around all day carrying things for other people, you know, for work, then therefore lifting up heavy things stunts growth in children. That was never proven. That was just a conclusion that they came to. And for some reason, that sort of come into the consciousness. But you can, especially at the age of 16, you can be fairly confident. If you've got the trick is you need someone who knows how to coach technique well. Just like you need a good cricket coach to improve your batting, you need someone who can make sure your technique is right in batting. You need someone who can make sure your technique is right when you go to the gym. Right. And a lot of commercial gyms deliberately don't do that because they know that the staff haven't been trained up to a level where they can do that properly. So there's problems with liabilities and things like that. But if you can find someone who knows what they're doing, then you can have 16-year-olds doing proper strength training, and it across the board makes them stronger and better and faster bowlers.
Okay. What you're saying is he probably needs some specialist kind of treatment. Is there anything very simple he could do just to make a difference?
Well, I think the key is that if he does go to the gym, which I do strongly recommend that he does, then what he needs to do is not worry about what sort of weight he's lifting up. Concentrate on making sure his technique is excellent. So even if he goes into the gym and does it on his own, he buys a book on, you know, strength training technique, which tells you how to do a deadlift and how to do a squat. Even if he does that, and then he just works on technique, and doesn't, you know, he doesn't worry about how many plates he's putting on the bar or anything complicated like that, then that's fine. If he can get access to someone who can train him up properly, then yeah, he can start adding weight, significant weight, to the bar and improving in that way. And there's another myth which says that, well, you know, if you train with weights, you'll become bulky, and for some reason the solution to that particular myth is that if you train with light weights, you won't become bulky. Well, if you train with light weights, you won't become strong. And in fact, if you train with light weights, you're probably more likely to become bulky because, it's a long-winded answer as to why that happens. But you're more likely to become bulky if you concentrate on heavier weights and lower rep ranges. Then you'll get stronger without getting bulky, which is what we want.
And of course, becoming bulky for a young, fast bowler is probably something you don't want to actually do.
No, I mean, bulky is a funny term as well, because, you know, what does that mean? When you think bulky, you think maybe, you know,
He-Man.
He-Man, yeah, or you know, Ronnie Coleman, the Mr. Olympia,
yeah.
You know, the massive guys. Well, you don't... A, those guys are genetic freaks. B, they take
steroids.
Drugs. There's a fair chance that some bodybuilders will take artificial enhancements. Let's put it that way.
Well put, David. Politically correct. Druggies. Yeah.
I don't want to accuse anyone of anything. And B, they eat huge amounts of food. I mean, it's ridiculous how much food they eat.
Yeah.
And that is how they get big and bulky. But they're doing that deliberately because they want the biggest muscles possible, because they're going on stage to show off their muscles.
Sure.
That just doesn't happen if you're playing cricket and doing, you know, flexibility training and your speed training and your doing your technical work with your bowling, and then also you do weights a couple of times a week, you're not going to get... So strength training is the way to go, definitely.
So strength training, but get it right and do it properly.
Yeah, it's all about technique. It's just like batting. It's all about technique. You know, if you're playing around your front pad, you're going to get LBW a lot. You know, if you're leaning forward when you squat, you're going to hurt your back. But if you do a proper squat, then you'll improve the strength of your back and your legs and your core, and you'll be a better bowler for it, or a better batsman.
So there you go, Glenn. In a nutshell, that's what he needs to be doing.
And that brings us to the end of the show this week. If you want your coaching questions answered by Berners and I, then you can get us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com, or you can phone in on 0208 816 7691 in the UK, 02 8005 7925 in Australia, or 347 722 1981 in the USA. Don't forget, our topics are all still open and they'll stay open forevermore. And if you have any interesting stories that you want to send us in, then you can phone us, email us, tweet us, or get us on Facebook. Thanks for listening to the show, and we'll see you next week.